athlete, not only for individual students' sakes, but for the sake of the local and national economy as well. So why are so many young people dropping out of high school, and what needs to be done to keep them in the classroom? What's working at this point? We're talking this hour with a trio of experts who not only have studied the problem, but are making progress at fixing it. Harvey Chisholm is Vice President of Educational Initiatives at the Philadelphia Youth Network, a nonprofit organization that works to improve the educational and economic outlook for young people. Its Project U-Turn is particularly focused on the city's dropout crisis. Welcome, Harvey, to Radio Times.
Thank you.
Paul Harrington is the director of the Center for Labor Markets and Policy and professor of education at Drexel. He's the author of a recent report on the collapse of the labor market for 16 to 24-year-olds in Philadelphia. Paul, welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning.
And Lisa Nutter is president of Philadelphia Academies, Inc. and Philadelphia's First Lady. Philadelphia Academies prepares young people for employment and post-secondary education through a model of smaller schools within larger schools that integrate academic courses with courses organized around a career theme. Lisa, welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So let's set the stage to begin with here and talk about how big a problem this really is. We talked about something like half of Philadelphia high school students not graduating. Why is that? Why are so many of these young people dropping out of school? Lisa?
Well, you know, we can't point to any one indicator or thing that drives them. It's a number of things, and we know this through a volume of research that we've done here locally and nationally. And you know, kids talk about kind of being disconnected from adults in the school. They talk about being disengaged from the material that they're learning in schools. They talk about things like not having a set of peers that maybe are as driven as they could be, and so sort of falling to that lower expectation. And so I think that there's a combination of things that really what some kids say push them out of school, and I think that the Project U-Turn report really, and Harvey I'm sure we'll talk more about this, I think really shed a lot of light locally on this issue. And one of the things that struck me most and frankly hurt my heart the most was when young people said when they dropped out nobody called, nobody came to get them, no one even asked, why did you leave? And so, there are a bunch of reasons, and I think that, some of them are academic, and some of them have to do with just having poor relationships with and in schools.
Yeah. Harvey, talk about that report. It was so eye-opening, and give us a little bit more of a sense of what's going on with so many of these young folks.
Sure. So the report that Lisa was referencing is Unfulfilled Promises, which came out through Project U-Turn, and what that really looked at specifically were some of the circumstances that were contributing to young people being out of school, and also helping us to get an insight into who actually we were talking about in terms of loss. The report really did show that, and it helped to kind of demystify some of the assumptions that people might have had, but it really did show that a lot of young people weren't necessarily those who were in these very extreme situations as far as court involvement or what have you, but across the board we were losing young people. What we did find was for young folks who had formal interaction with the court system, either on the delinquent or dependent side as foster care youth or juvenile delinquents, that they had higher rates of dropout, which for many people it comes as no surprise. But what the data also showed is that there are a variety of other reasons why young people are leaving. There are a number of early warning indicators that got identified through the research, which were very helpful to us in really understanding that you can actually anticipate to some degree when a young person starts to have hiccups, if we call it that, along the way, that they might be highly at risk of dropping out. Some of that pertains to attendance. Some of it pertains to on-time promotion and credit accumulation.
So you can sort of see this coming down the road, that there are some signs that this kid is at risk.
Yes,
dropping out.
There are. And some of the work that got mounted as a result of the release of the report was actually organized around looking at some of these early warning indicators and trying to figure out what types of interventions can you put in more proactively before we lose young people.
And Paul, let's talk about the economic impact, because it can't be underestimated, I don't think, what it means to lose so many of these young people with all their potential, with their earning power, with their spending power, and all that goes with that.
It's pretty powerful. If you take a look at, say, going back 30 years ago when I was a kid, a young guy who was a high school dropout in Philadelphia could expect to earn in their working life about $1 million. They could get a job in manufacturing, warehousing, or longshore. By mid-decade, that was down to under $500,000. Mm-hmm. So the tremendous employment and earnings losses for these youngsters. If you're a 16 and 19 year old kid in the city of Philadelphia last year, you had about a 1 in 9 chance of working. It was just a complete disconnection from the job market.
So there's, I was reading one of the reports where a researcher said, simply put, there just is no work for a high school dropout.
Well, part of what's happened is the job content, particularly in Philadelphia, has changed a lot. And the goods-producing blue-collar jobs have, through technological change and other forces, just sort of gone away in the city. And it's split the job market in half in certain ways. We've got a lot of growth in high-end, professional, technical, managerial, high-level sales, college labor market jobs. We send a lot of kids into the post-secondary system. Then there's growth in, kind of part-time, lower-end, service sets of occupations. So that kind of traditional, kind of blue-collar job where you learn the skills in a job has largely disappeared, in the city. So, there's a kind of a growing literacy gap, a growing educational attainment gap. So that, 30 years ago, you got punished a lot less for doing something stupid than is the case today.
So what does it mean in terms of the economy, in terms of what does the region lose as a result? Is there a way to calculate?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. I mean, it's tremendous loss in productive capacity. I mean, you think about 16 to 24-year-olds, this is when you're making really important life decisions, both positive and negative. Mm-hmm. And if you make, right sets of decisions, you can have a tremendously – Philadelphia has actually done relatively well over the course of the economic recession. So you can have tremendous opportunity, tremendous mobility if you make a good set of decisions around literacy, around family formation, around educational attainment. If you make, the wrong set of decisions, the opportunity cost for you and the region is pretty high. There's all this productive capacity that doesn't get utilized and, in fact, becomes a net negative on the region. That high school dropouts, when you look at the contribution to their community and with respect to how much do they pay in taxes relative to how much they withdraw in transfer benefits, it's a very large negative in Philadelphia.
Yeah. So, Harvey, what ultimately happens to these kids? They drop out of school. There's very little opportunity for employment. What becomes of them?
Well, in some instances, there are a number of students who actually do attempt to make their way back. So, I think that's one of the first things that we should note. So in those instances, when there's that effort put forward, it's really important to have the right set of opportunities and options in place for them. Mm-hmm. It can be through a particular program design that really does speak to some of what Paul was sharing in terms of thinking about the orientation to what happens after high school and kind of that right and appropriate post-secondary preparation. But for many students who don't manage to find a right option, a good fit, many of them do actually go the route that Paul was just saying and look to long-term unemployment and kind of dependency in a variety of ways. Some folks have talked about the dropout issue in terms of the interruption of the prison pipeline, right? And thinking about that issue. And so there are some and high numbers of folks who actually do wind up having that as their outcome, as their fate.
Why more males than females, and Black and Hispanic in particular?
Well, some of it is really around, and I think Lisa spoke to this a little bit earlier, the relationships and the relevance in terms of what's happening for young people. So when we look at the data, what we found is that disproportionately Latino and African American males were leaving school. And so approximately two years ago, there was some work done by the School Reform Commission at the time to really try and understand what's happening with this population of young people. And what folks really did start to identify was the notion that there's first the expectation that young people, in fact, complete, right? Young males. So they're countering a lot of prejudice and a lot of stereotypes in many instances, in many classrooms, where the focus is much more on their behavior than it is their attainment. And after a history of that focus, it does, in some cases, really drive young people out of the classroom. There are also other life circumstances outside of school that impact what's happening with young men. Some of those things really do relate to the need for unemployment, the need to be able to earn and have an income, to think about different types of incentives that make persisting in school worthwhile for them. But I think ultimately, in addition to kind of thinking about the expectation that young people stay in school and having the supports in place, it needs to be the sort of thing where they see it as being worthwhile and personally meaningful.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with the conversation, the connections, the professional development that's afforded to adults who are in their lives to be able to have those types of conversations.
Yeah. Lisa, I was struck by what you said about the disconnection and the fact that for many of these kids, nobody even tries to find them or figure out why they left or calls them to see what happened to them. Certainly, Philadelphia Academy is directing in a big way the disconnection issue, but talk about that and what the school district is doing. Is there something in place to help the administration, the faculty, become more connected with these young folks?
Yes. Well, I mean, we're talking about several types of disconnects, right? The one disconnect is a disconnection between the material that's being learned in school and its relevance in the real world. So, you know, young people are not seeing any real relevance in terms of what they're learning in school and in what they need. Hmm. And so that's one disconnect, that we're, you know, largely in high schools not really able to bring the real world in and help kids understand those connections better.
Well, let me stop you there, because is that related to the sort of teaching for standardized tests idea that many people are frustrated with, or is it something else?
It's related to a lot of things, I think, but where I want to start, because that's where Philadelphia Academies and the Career Academy model does start, is in making those connections stronger. So, you know, when we work in high schools, the whole idea is to organize young people's learning around career themes and real-world knowledge. Mm-hmm. What do you need when you leave here, whether you're going on to a career or going on to college? And so there's that disconnect. The other disconnect is between adults and young people in schools and outside of schools. So inside of schools, what we see are high schools that are largely organized, sort of like many universities. Teachers have their specialties. They don't have much time to work together. And no one, like in elementary and middle school, is really quite organized around kids. So somehow we think that when they get to high school, they don't need relationships with adults, which is totally not true. They may say they don't want us in their lives, but they really do.
Need it all the more.
They need it all the more. Yeah. So the other disconnect that the Career Academy model really helps to foster and deal with is making sure that they're adults organized around a set of young people throughout their high school experience. Mm-hmm. And then there's the disconnect with the real world and people outside in the world. So professionals like you, people in higher ed, organized labor. We used volunteers from those sectors, bringing them into schools and getting them out and getting kids outside of school to have these relationships with these people who are, you know, are in these different professions. And so kids begin to set goals for themselves. They begin to, and they see these people as real role models. And I think that until we are able to really organize around these disconnects, we'll continue to get some of these results, these negative results. But largely, I mean, it's a big effort. And so, you know, it's what we work on every day at Philadelphia Academies.
We're talking about the high school dropout rate in Philadelphia in particular. It is staggering, but there are a number of programs that are making real progress toward resolving that issue. We'd love to hear from you at 888-477-9499. You know the number better than I do. We'll be right back with more on the high school dropout rate right after this.
Mozart returns to the Opera Company of Philadelphia stage in February with a new production of the comic opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio. Set in the 1920s and using silent film as a backdrop, Abduction runs in five performances, February 17th through 26th at the Academy of Music. For information, 215-893-1018 or operaphila.org. The Opera Company of Philadelphia supports WHYY.
I'm Marty Moscowane. It's the winter membership campaign. We're thrilled that you listen to WHYY. Now take that next step and become a supporter. 2012 is going to be a busy year politically speaking, and Radio Times and WHYY will keep you up to speed on the local and national races and informed about the issues. That's what we do. What you need to do is make a pledge of support right now by calling 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org.
Open Connections, a progressive educational environment, supports WHYY. At Open Connections, youth ages 4 through 18 attend programs 1 to 3 days a week from September to June. Guided by their principles of respect, freedom, responsibility, and natural learning, Open Connections serves as a community base for young people and their families seeking an innovative, collaborative, and process-conscious educational environment. An open house at their campus in Newtown Square is Sunday, February 12th at 4 p.m. Details at openconnections.org.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about the high school dropout rate in Philadelphia. It is staggering, and the ripple effects that it is having on our economy.
Over the past year, Monica Reyes has put in one job application after another.
Macy's, Walmart, Kmart, Sears, Fridays, Outbacks, and Sonics.
The response is usually the same.
All they would say is, our hiring manager not in, or we're going to look at your applications and we're going to give you a call back.
Imagine a line of 14 million unemployed Americans all looking for jobs. Now imagine yourself way towards the back of that line. That's where Monica Reyes is.
It makes you mad. It makes you not even want to do it no more. Nobody going to even try to give you a call back.
Well, you can hear the discouragement in that young lady's voice, and you multiply her by many, many, many others who are in the same position. It really, I think, crystallizes what these young folks are up against, Lisa, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think what she's speaking to, I mean, let me just back up, and I think Paul will talk more about this, but, you know, people who are persistently unemployed know people who are persistently unemployed. And the reverse of that is people who are consistently employed know people who are consistently employed. And so, you know, part of what part of the root of her frustration is that there's this sort of lack of social network that helps her get a job. And, you know, it is very hard to just walk cold into anywhere, yeah, particularly in a tight economy, and just end up with a job.
Yeah. I want to reiterate that we are talking with three guests today about the issue of high school dropouts in Philadelphia. Roughly half of them are dropping out, but there are programs in place that are really making a dent in that problem. We've been talking with Harvey Chisholm, who is the Vice President of Educational Initiatives at the Philadelphia Youth Network, and we're going to be talking particularly about Project U-Turn there. Talking also with Paul Harrington, who is Director of the Center for Labor Markets and Policy and Professor of Education at Drexel, has done a lot of research on what all this means for our economy and the ripple effects of the dropout rate. And we're also talking with Lisa Nutter, President of Philadelphia Academies and Philadelphia's First Lady, very active in connecting young people with career opportunities, with post-secondary work. And we've been talking about what's being done to help so many of these young people who are dropping out. Paul, I'd like you to pick up on what Lisa was just talking about, having listened to Monica's plight and the plight of so many other young people like her.
Right. Monica's problem is she's at the bottom of the queue. There's lots of job seekers that are largely ordered by level of educational attainment and prior work experience. So for a young woman like her, she's just going to have a very difficult time getting at bat. Second problem for many of the kids who are dropouts is they have poor literacy proficiencies. And they're going to get screened out increasingly. Some of the big box firms that are out there now are using computerized online application processes that are time limited. So as a result, if you don't have strong reading and response skills, then you're going to get shut out of them pretty quickly. So, you know, the labor market is very much stacked against kids with a few years of schooling, there's no question. Yeah. And as Lisa suggested, it's very much path dependent. If you start out badly, the path that you'll be on you'll be on that path for a long time.
Yeah.
And one of the things I would add to what Paul was just sharing is that when you think about kind of the right types of programs that then are needed or should be put into place for this type of circumstance, it really does focus on this idea around transition. Lisa made reference to it when we were talking about how students make their way into high school and they're still as much in need of adult support and promotion and encouragement as ever. But when we think about the transition options that are available to students as they move on, right, through high school, what prepares them to understand that the diploma in and of itself is not sufficient? And how do you start to really do that type of work? Is it through the career exposure experience? Is it through pipelines that lead into the attainment of a certification or a credential, whether it's a baccalaureate degree or some other type of skill certificate?
Yeah. So. Yeah, because certainly now, even getting the high school diploma, I mean, it's certainly better than dropping out, but it still doesn't give you a whole lot of options at this point.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah, and I feel like that was a lot of what Paul was alluding to.
Yeah.
Right. And in addition to the deck being stacked against a lot of these young people, if they do not have the academic credentials they need, you know, I want to go back to this fact that even if Monica got to the stage of really getting through the test, you know, whatever diagnostics, Sonics and whoever else uses to sort of vet people, you know, it could very well be that the deck was stacked against her as a just being a young person, you know, because there are lots of biases about young people and their abilities in the workplace. And so, you know, there are a lot of different layers, I think, to this issue.
Yeah. Well, let me first give the numbers so that our listeners can join in our conversation. We're talking about the dropout rate and what's being done to address it. The number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear your questions and comments on that issue. Harvey, talk about Project U-Turn and how it is really helping young people to do exactly that.
Sure. So Project U-Turn is a campaign that's organized around resolving on the city's dropout crisis. It exists as a body of work underneath the Philadelphia Council for College and Career Success, and has been around for about five, almost 6 years now since its launch. And U-Turn is really organized around a number of activities. The first begins to look specifically at getting a handle on what the data are telling us about the young people that we're talking about. There's been a lot of work done in terms of kind of the research and with the release of the Unfulfilled Promises report that started to catalyze efforts here in the city. Some of the other things that Project U-Turn has really been organized around is starting to think about how do you start to build a coalition of stakeholders, a cross-sector body that's really looking. So in the same way that Lisa was making reference to how do you engage the corporate community and others in helping young people transition, Project U-Turn has really been looking specifically at that effort. How do you begin to make this a conversation that's community-wide? There's been a focus on also promoting the right types of programs that matter and that are effective for young people. How do we expand the number of options that are available to them? And then I guess the final thing to really note is that there's been a lot of policy work done as well, really trying to understand the right types of policies that need to be promoted, whether it's the creation of frameworks that really speak to the right type of learning environment that's most conducive to young people persisting and doing well, or whether it's really looking at a matter of truancy policy or issue that we know often contributes to young people not making it back to school and graduating.
What about money? Because that is always an issue, no matter what we're talking about. When we're talking about, you know, projects to address these kinds of issues, we talk about the Philadelphia School District in itself and all the financial difficulties that it's had, where you've got children who may not even have textbooks, let alone have the opportunity to engage in programs, Lisa, like Philadelphia Academies.
Right. Well, I mean, money is an issue, but it's not. So I want to just sort of step back a minute and say that we may not have all the resources that we need in our community to address this issue, but we have more than we think.
Okay.
And actually, the Philadelphia Council for College and Career Success, I think, helped us understand how much we really do have. And if we align these resources appropriately and be strategic in their deployment, we actually can get a bigger bang for our buck if we think more about how we do this. But, I mean, there are models like the Career Academy model, which Philadelphia Academies originated in 1969, that don't cost a whole lot. Mm-hmm. The district spends about $13,000 to $14,000 per student. The money we raise goes to providing these supports that we'll talk more about, but it costs us about $750 extra. So on top of what the district, you know, puts in per student, about $750 and additionally to support kids in the ways that we're talking about. And so $750 per kid is not a lot of money. Now, it's a lot of effort. It is a lot of effort to organize, as Harvey pointed out, you know, an entire community around a set of kids.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of effort to get all the adults, you know, on message and on the same page. And so I think that there are definitely things we can do that don't cost a lot of money, but it will certainly be a lot of effort on our part.
And it's the willingness to do the effort.
Absolutely.
You know, more than it is sometimes getting the money together.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the phones. We'll start off in Conshohocken, and we'll bring Dave in on our conversation. Hi, Dave. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks very much. My question is pretty simple. Is it just plain too easy to drop out? I mean, why? Maybe there could be some changes in the law that would essentially take that decision out of the hands of kids and basically say you can't drop out. That wouldn't solve these problems, but it would at least, it would help. You wouldn't have children essentially making this decision that's so enormous, and then essentially once they do that, the district's off the hook. Why not just make it much, much harder to drop out legally and, you know, give these kids the services that they need while they're still in school and not make it so easy for them to actually drop out?
A number of states have actually passed legislation to require students to stay in school through age 18. And, you know, the evidence so far seems to suggest that that's helpful. That it, you know, kind of puts parents and students on notice that, you know, they need to be paying attention to this, to things like attendance and in-school behavior and the like, these precursors to dropping out are important, they're going to get paid attention to. So, you know, it's really kind of enforcement of truancy laws, kind of other things that, you know, it's pretty tough, but there seems to be some evidence that that you get some gains from it.
And is Pennsylvania a state that does not have anything like that in place, or has it been discussed?
At 17.
17 you can drop out.
At 17 you can drop
out. Wow.
And so we would have just heard actually in the State of the Union, right?
Right, exactly.
Where President Obama was actually talking about the recommendation that the compulsory age be raised to 18, just for the issues that the caller was talking about. I think just the one thing to note, though, is that also with that expectation, that formal expectation being put into place, there needs to be the other things, right, mm-hmm. brought to bear to make students do well and continue in school. It's not just necessarily saying that you are forbidden or prohibited from leaving, but here's what we also have in place to
right.
keep you here.
Right. Well, here, I mean, I think, and what I would add to both of these points is that we can certainly raise the dropout age, right? But we could also say, listen, when you graduate, these are the competencies we expect you to have. So, you know, maybe you could test out a 12th grade, if you can pass an exit exam. We do not have an exit exam in Pennsylvania, yeah. by the way. And I think the other thing is, and I'm not, you know, advocating either way, I'm just sort of saying just raising the age isn't the solution. I think the other part of this has to be really looking at, again, you know, what are we asking kids to do when they're in schools? If the material is not engaging, if the material isn't, if they do not see the relevance in the real world, then we'll continue, you know, in this spiral. And so I think this is an issue, again, it's not going to be solved by just raising the age yeah. that young people are allowed to drop out, but it's got to be solved by dealing with relationships in schools and outside of schools. It's got to be solved by making sure kids are learning things that are relevant in their lives and that motivate them to learn,
yeah.
you know. And so I think people say, you know, a lot of people, I've heard other people say, well, I learned that way, then these kids should be able to learn
yeah.
that way. I mean, the reality is that, you know, this is a different world than I grew up in,
mm-hmm.
and in terms of what, you know, young people are expected to know when they graduate.
Yeah.
And so we have to look at each one of these issues in a multifaceted
yeah.
solution.
And the stakes are so much higher for
Absolutely.
Them when they do come out of school.
I could not meet the expectations that these young people have on their shoulders
yeah.
when they graduate.
Yeah.
I really can't.
It's huge. Yeah. I remember saying to my son that I'm glad I got into college when I did, because I'm not so sure they take me
now. So, I think we all wonder
yeah,
that.
The pressures are enormous. Let's go back to the phones to Malika Hill, and we'll bring Jack in on our conversation. Hi there, Jack.
Good morning. My name is Jack. I live in Malika Hill, New Jersey right now. Before that, I lived in Philadelphia for over 65 years. And I'd just like to comment that nobody mentioned one of the reasons why these kids are dropping out of school. They don't have a strong base at the house. They don't have family life. They don't have a mom. They don't have a dad. And they're not really, they're not controlled by some adults within the household. I mean, sure, they got to have some kind of leadership at school. But, you know, if you don't have a strong anchor, then, you know, these kids are doomed, you know. That's where all the activity takes place, from the time they're children, from age 6 up.
Well, that's a great point, Jack. I appreciate you bringing that up, and I'm going to invite our guests to respond to that.
Well, I mean, for me, having stable home life or having some adult in your family that you can go to is absolutely paramount. I mean, I agree with that part. But what we've also seen are young people who are resilient sort of beyond that. So we wonder how they have been able to accomplish what they've been able to accomplish given their family lives. And there are a lot of those young people in Philadelphia and nationally. And so what we've learned by studying these, what we call resilient people, is that we can actually build resilience in young people,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not something that you're sort of born innately yeah. with. That young people who are resilient tend to be hyper-focused kids. They are young or people. They set goals for themselves. Those goals may change over time, but they set mm-hmm. goals. Secondly, they believe that they can accomplish things, that they can shape their world. And then third, you know, each one of them, when they study these people, what they learned is each one of them had at least one positive adult in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
whether it was a family member or not in their family. At least one. Yeah. We're not talking about legions of people, but this one person was the person that helped them keep on track. And so I think that when you think about those three things, that's not rocket science. Yeah. And if a young person doesn't have a stable family life, it seems to me within this large community of 1.5 million people, we should be able to figure out how to give them those three things.
Yeah. Well, and that, Paul, brings up the whole idea of mentoring. It brings up, you know, thoughts about maybe faith-based organizations that can have some role in supporting some of these young people who may not have all the stability that they need at home, but there are other places where they may be able to find it.
Yeah, there are. But I think a more important point that I want to get back to that Lisa talked about was having these youngsters have this focus. And that for many kids, you know, when you think about what the world signals to a youngster, you know, with respect to success, it means three things. One, it says, you know, have strong reading, writing, and math skills. If you don't have that, you're in deep trouble. Second thing it signals is you've got to figure out a career pathway in ways that, you know, people 30 or 40 years ago didn't.
Right.
You become this big investor, and you're making choices early on. And the third thing is getting this work experience. And so, particularly for young guys, we find that having kind of that focus, which, you know, to be able to explain why you need to take algebra, you know, it's the age-old question every mom and dad has, why do I have to study this stuff, right?
I hear it every week.
Right.
Yes,
and, you know, the answer is, you know, get into an auto repair shop and, you know, get your answer, or an electronic shop, you know. And so what we find a lot of times is that you know, more career-focused education that we see in career academies and other places really, really helps really get these kids to be retained in school. It also raises their literacy skills. That at the end of the day, that those two things, getting the literacy proficiencies, the occupational proficiencies, that's the key to success in this city.
Yeah. And Paul, the thing that I guess is discouraging, too, is that because the rate of employment for teenagers has dropped significantly,
yep,
just even in the last 5 years,
mm-hmm,
so many of them aren't getting the training that just comes from having a job, just
that's
being
right,
able to deal with people and the skills that come out of that.
That's
right?
Exactly right. If you know, Lisa and I now are doing a little employer survey around the city, and what you get back is what employers really desire, a set of behavioral traits. Among all their employees, this just isn't kids. This is things like, you know, showing up on time, being a reliable employee, being courteous to customers, you know, things that, you know, many listeners take for granted. But if you haven't worked, you don't necessarily understand
right,
really well. And the best way to learn those skills is through on-the-job experience.
Yeah. You were getting ready to say something, Harvey, and...
Yeah, I was actually just going to add one other way of thinking about kind of rounding out the conversation and the story is to think also about how do you really build on the positive power of peers, right? So, you know, we've talked about definitely the influence that adults and mentors can have in the lives of students, but also it's really important to think about how do you create conditions where young people are reinforcing themselves and building community there. And I think that's one of the things that's also a critical part of the solution.
Well, and you can't underestimate the power of peers.
No, mm-hmm, no. And we see it day in, day out in terms of, you know, the career academy model and really supporting schools, public high schools in Philadelphia, and delivering that model. And it's interesting because I hear we're wrapping up a little bit, but I'd like to come back and talk more about
absolutely,
the model because I think it's an interesting focus.
We will pick up right there. We're talking about the high school dropout rate in Philadelphia. We're talking with some people who are doing a lot to make a real dent in that problem. I'm Tracy Matisak filling in for Marty Moskowain, and we'll be back with more of Radio Times right after this.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, low energy, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
I'm Marty Moskowain. This is the winter membership campaign here at WHYY. We remind you several times a year that if you listen to WHYY, take that next step and become a supporter. We have an ambitious goal, 8,000 pledges, and we can make that goal if you make that call at 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Think of what you get on programs like Radio Times, in-depth interviews about local, national, and international news issues, and and events that matter to you. We also introduce you to interesting people and ideas. We believe that you're the kind of person who is curious about the world we live in. We also know it takes a lot of work to keep up on everything. So we do your homework for you. We track down guests, invite your phone calls to create a lively and informative conversation. You don't hear that on the radio every day. Make a call right now at 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at whyy.org. Thanks so much.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain. We are talking about the fact that roughly half of Philadelphia high school students drop out. What becomes of them, and what are the ripple effects on our economy, and what's being done to keep them in the classroom? We've got three guests with us. We're talking with Harvey Chisholm from the Philadelphia Youth Network, with Paul Harrington, who is director of the Center for Labor Markets and Policy and professor of education at Drexel. Lisa Nutter, Philadelphia's First Lady, is with us. She is the president of Philadelphia Academies, Inc. And by the way, you'll be able to hear much more about Philadelphia's dropout crisis tonight at 6 on WHYY's Newsworks. You can read more about it online at whyy.newsworks.org. And for a complete look at how the dropout crisis is impacting one Philadelphia neighborhood, check out the newest print edition from our news partner, the Public School Network. So much more to come later in the day and from the Public School Network on the dropout crisis in Philadelphia. Lisa Nutter, when we left off, we were talking about the whole peer connection.
Sure. I mean, it is absolutely critical. You know, one of the things that the Career Academy model that we've been referencing earlier actually does is when it divides young people into sort of smaller schools within mm-hmm. a school, relationships not only develop with the adult and the teachers in the school, but the relationships develop among peers. And what young people talk about is that these relationships are absolutely critical in keeping them focused and getting them through high school. They talk about how, you know, when we are challenged to do hard things, when you're doing a hard thing, it is great to have a number of other people doing that hard mm-hmm. thing with you. And the other thing we notice is that different norms are set within these groups. And so, you know, it's not okay to be a slacker. It's not okay mm-hmm. to be a low achiever, and that these expectations get shared among the peers as well. And so that's mm-hmm. that's absolutely critical.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. Just having that the higher expectation and not expecting kids to live down to the expectations that so many adults have for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the expectation thing is, you know, down from the adults to the students and to young people is has become a very big barrier in terms of really moving an agenda. And Philadelphia is not unusual in that. And, and focusing on, you know, how to help set a different expectation by bringing a number of adults who have that high expectation for kids around them is also critical. So,
tell us, too, how Philadelphia Academies is different from, say, a traditional VOTEC kind of program.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, the Career Academy model has been around since 1969. It was originated by Philadelphia Academies, Inc., and it was simply put a way to see whether or not we could allay the dropout crisis by organizing schools differently and organizing adults around kids differently. And so the model basically involves a few parts. One is breaking large, complex high schools up into sort of smaller schools of 100 to 200 students, organizing their coursework around career themes, and ensuring that they have, coursework in that industry theme throughout their high school experience.
And there's the relevance issue.
And there's the relevance issue. But the other part of the model is to really use the theme to integrate different course subjects. So if you're in an automotive academy, then maybe you're learning math from the automotive industry perspective, or you're working on case studies from that perspective. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is to really get kids in doing hands-on projects and project-based instruction, which is what it's called.
Yeah.
And then I think the piece that around the relationships that really drives the model is that because kids are organized together, stay together throughout high school in these career academies, there are also teachers organized around these different academies. And so those teachers become kind of the go-to teachers in the school for the kids. And they actually help do a lot of the curriculum integration and relationship building for young people in these schools. And sometimes they become advocates, and many times they become advocates for their students. And so those are the sort of core pieces, but they're and structural elements. And kids recognize those structural elements. Because one of the things that we were really concerned about is in all the things, there's a number of standards in the model, but of all the things that we do or help kids, schools do, you know, what's the thing that is the stickiest? What's the thing that gets us the biggest bang for our buck? And kids say three things. They say, you know, the adults you put around us have high expectations for us. They say that, you know, you give us exposure to opportunities and skills that we wouldn't be able to accomplish otherwise or get otherwise. And they talk about these bonds and relationships they have with one another and with the teachers and with the adult volunteers that we put in their spaces. And so, you know, when you think about that, again, this isn't rocket science. These are very simple things that we can do that don't cost a lot of money, but then give us a big bang for our buck at the end.
And I would just add that all of the things that Lisa just mentioned are as relevant and transferable to a recovery effort and strategy as it is a prevention effort. When we're talking about re-engaging young people who have already left, those same factors, those same opportunities, those same experiences are as valuable in terms of kind of the attraction, the engagement of young people and the preparation and promotion of them. So there's a whole, you know, array of programs that work on either side of the side of the issue, both keeping young people in school and then returning them back to school and graduating them. And some of them, you know, one of the big, I guess, examples of that type of model for us locally is around the accelerated high schools, which, you know, are a cornerstone of what we locally refer to as kind of our system of options, our multiple pathways for young people. And the accelerated schools are small learning environments, much like the academies, that are designed to specifically work with overage and undercredit students and many young people who might have already dropped out, to get them reconnected to education and to provide them with those types of relationships and expectations that help them.
And what is the challenge just in identifying the kids who are part of this, particularly the ones who have already dropped out of the system?
Well, I mean, I think that they're, you know, in communities and pockets, folks at the community level know where the young people are. So, I mean,
yes.
I think that it's, you know, to think that they're missing in action is not necessarily the case. I feel like, you know, one of the pieces, though, is really trying to figure out, and I think Lisa was alluding to this, when we talk about the human capacity, you know, at the system level, where are the adults or the professionals who are in place to be able to do that type of outreach, to make that type of connection? You know, one of the programs that is, you know, exists here in Philadelphia is something that we call our re-engagement center. And that particular service provides young people a place to come to get information and to get connected about where they could go to finish their high school careers. And for us, it's a really vital service because, you know, when you think about just a young person making his or her way on their own, trying to figure out what right door to pursue, it can be a maze, you know, and it's probably a huge understatement. And so having that type of offering available is valuable. And so when we think about where the young people are, in many instances, we know where they are. In some instances, perhaps not so greatly, but the critical piece to have is that place where they can come to be directed appropriately.
Yeah, I think that it is important to get kids directed. I mean, when you look at you know, for example, the Kensington neighborhood, which is, you know, really among the poorest in the city, these kids just have the adults in the neighborhood have less attachment to the job market. There are a few years of schooling among the adults, and so the kids are disconnected. So trying to find a different pathway for these youngsters that ties them with other kinds of adults, kids that are better motivated, is going to be fundamentally essential for them to generate improved outcomes for them.
This morning on Radio Times, we've been talking about Philadelphia's dropout crisis. And once again, you can hear more about it tonight at 6 on WHYY's NewsWorks tonight. You can read about it online at newsworks.org. And then for a complete look at how the dropout crisis is impacting one Philadelphia neighborhood, check out the newest print edition from our news partner, The Public School Notebook. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Marty Moskowane, and you're listening to Radio Times.
And you're listening to WHYY and our winter membership campaign. This is Chris Cetullo here with Dave Davies. And we're both delighted to be here talking to you during Radio Times. If for no other reason, Dave, that you and I have both had the opportunity to host that show. We know just how much work Marty Moskowane puts into it.
That's right. It's not easy. And the effort of all those producers who find just the right guests, as they did for this program, they take a critical issue and say, you know what? Let's drill a little deeper. Let's find just the right people. One of them, in this case, happens to be Lisa Nutter, the First Lady. But she has a terrific program and has things to say about dropouts. The important thing is that we all come together and support this. This thing thrives and survives on the Let's Pitch In model, and now it's time for all of us to do that. The number to call, 1-888-345-9499, or, of course, you can do it so easily on our secure website, whyy.org.
And as you heard Tracy Matysak just mention, the first hour we were discussing the very, very critical issue of dropouts in Philadelphia. And we were working off a story done by Ben Harold. Ben Harold is a reporter who works both for us here at WHYY and for the Public School Notebook. This is a unique and novel partnership that we've developed to give you deeper and more sophisticated and more consistent coverage of public education. And it's a partnership that has worked extremely well so far in the first year we've been doing it, and it's an example of what we're trying to do here at WHYY to extend the reach and expand the depth of the work we do for you. It's a partnership that we're very proud of, and that's a word I want to underline, Dave, partnership, because really that's what you become when you give us a call and make a pledge at 1-888-345-9499. You become our partner. You become our partner in everything that we do here in terms of on-air programming, in terms of news coverage, in terms of extending our reach in the community, in terms of what we do on the web at newsworks.org. So won't you think about right now, this moment, during radio times, to becoming a partner in all that we're trying to do and become our partner in trying to extend our service at 1-888-345-9499 or online, Dave, at WHYY.org.
That's right. You know, we have an ambitious goal for this winter membership campaign because we have ambitions in serving you. You know, it's great that we've been able to keep Marty Moscowane here for 25 years. I mean, she has shown the kind of talent and knowledge and interviewing skills that could have taken her a lot of places. I mean, she could probably be making many times what she is here, but she's here for two reasons. One, she believes in this. She believes in a model that says, I want an hour where I don't have to break every 11 minutes for a commercial, and I want an hour where my only goal is to serve our listeners as opposed to our advertisers or to scramble for ratings. And the other reason is that we have been able to give her enough of a salary to make it worth her staying here. It's nobody here makes a fortune, but it's if we want good professional folks doing these programs, that includes Marty, that includes her terrific staff, it's really all up to all of us to sustain it. And we have enough listeners that nobody has to throw their back out lifting this thing up if we just do a little bit. And unfortunately, it's kind of easy not to. You can just listen. But we think that you're the kind of person that supports some things in your life that make a difference. We hope that this program and this station are counted among them. And now, Chris, as we sort of get into this sort of, I don't know, the seventh or eighth inning of a membership drive, it's easy to lose a little steam. I mean, you're maybe a little tired of hearing us. I understand that. But we really do the difference between having a program and a station that's just sort of okay and fills the time and one that's really dynamic and growing and doing meaningful things is your call. Think about it now. Figure out what this service means to you. Pick up the phone, 1-888-345-9499, or, of course, online. So easy. Our volunteers are standing by at whyy.org.
That's right, Dave. You used the word ambition, and there's no question that our goals for this winter membership campaign are ambitious. They're the most ambitious we've ever, you know, put in front of ourselves. Are we doing it just to say we got a big number or just, you know, for the sake of growth? No, it's about being able to plan and look forward to what we're going to do in this critical election year, both locally and nationally, and saying, you know what? Our members are behind us. Our members believe in what we're doing. Our members want us to do the very best job we've ever done of giving them sophisticated, in-depth coverage of the issues and the candidates this year. And how are we going to be able to plan for that ambition, to really decide to do the very best that we can throughout the course of the year? It's this campaign. If this campaign is a success, that puts down a marker, and then we know for the rest of the year we can do everything that we've dreamed of to serve you in covering these elections. So if you want to be our partner in that ambition, if you want to be our partner in helping us do the very best job we can of covering this crucial election year in South Jersey, in Pennsylvania, in Delaware and nationally, 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY, or online safely and securely anytime at WHYY.org.
If you're one of the listeners in New Jersey who now gets a strong, clear signal and are grateful to have that because of the transmitters that we purchased over the past year, that might be a good reason to call in and chip in to help. You know, those transmitters will all have to be sustained. We're going to need engineers to do that. That's an effort on our part, kind of a leap into broader service, bigger service, and a broader audience. If you're one of those listeners and are happy to finally get a clear signal, by all means, that might be a good reason for you to call and make a pledge. I'll tell you another reason that I think in particular, Chris, for Radio Times listeners to do this is the unique way that we structure fundraising breaks around this program. This is the one program where we don't cut in two or three times. I mean, we let that conversation roll for 50 minutes, and we realized over the years that in a live program like this, it just doesn't make sense to break in and break out, that we want to have Marty, or in this case Tracy Matysak and her guests, really explore an issue, get into the depth, the context, the details, and let you enjoy that, secure in the knowledge that with a little break at the end, you will call in and say, you know what, that's worth something. I'm in. Count me in. I'll support that. If these shows come one after the other all year long, terrific, you know, contact with cultural figures, literary folks, and then exploring a critical public issue as we are today, like dropouts, particularly in Philadelphia. If that means something to you, and if our respect for that conversation means something to you, please make your call and let us know. It's 1-888-345-9499, or of course online at whyy.org.
Now, Dave, you make a great point about the real treasure that Radio Times is in terms of the time it has to really dig deep into, roam about, and to explore an issue. And of course, since Radio Times has been on our air here at WHYY-FM for 25 years, people in this region may not realize just how unusual it is in the landscape of radio for even on public radio, an hour-long program, to be devoted to one topic and one set of guests and to really dig in that kind of depth. That's what Marty believes in. That's what she works so hard to bring you every day, to give you 2 hours of live radio with the kind of mastery of the subject matter and the in-depth questions she comes up with is an extraordinary effort for her producers and her every day. And what sustains that effort, what enables that effort,